This edition of The Wellness Prescription is brought to you by Healthy Planet, helping the people of the world to live healthy lives.
Welcome to The Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for joining me today. Relationships require effort from both parties. But let's be honest, it isn't always easy to see eye to eye or to be on the same page all the time. And sometimes married couples get divorced. That in itself isn't always easy. My guest today is Nandishi Becca, Toronto-based family lawyer. She is joining me to help us understand the impact divorce can have on the children. Thank you so much and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Claudia. Thank you so much for having me and good morning.
I thought we'd start by you telling us just a little bit about yourself so that listeners know what kind of law you practice, how long you've been practicing, all that good stuff.
Okay, so I am, as you mentioned, a family law lawyer. I work out of downtown Toronto at Stanchieri Family Law. I've been practicing for just under 10 years now, so that's been my bread and butter practice. I have dabbled in other areas of law in the beginning of my career, like insurance defense, but I made my way to family law very early on, and that's been my passion. And I think it's been my passion because I come from a very solid family base myself, and I've used my, my privilege of having such a beautiful family and loving parents to really take that into my practice. And what I like about my practice in dealing with families that are going through these difficult times is really about bringing that sensitivity to how, difficult it can be when families are going through probably one of the most difficult transitions that they can go through. And that's, divorce and separation. And I think it takes a lot of, perspective and sympathy, empathy, understanding, patience, all of that goes into daily practice. And I really find my passion lies with family law.
And that's so nice to hear because we all are aware that, people get divorced. Relationships don't always last forever. And that is okay. So I do believe and I do feel that the stigma around being divorced no longer exists because everybody deserves to be happy. So if you're not happy in a relationship, but I guess with your experience of 10 years practicing law, you've seen a variety of cases where some of them are easy, some of them are complicated, and some of them get kind of messy. And is that how you started to understand the impact that divorce has on the kids?
Any one of my clients who have come to me in my tenure as a family law lawyer have had different and unique experiences. As you mentioned, some processes go easier than others, and some are much more complex, and some are very emotionally driven. And so all of it has an impact on children when there's children involved. Whether, it's a smooth process or it's a difficult process, it's a, sad or difficult, transition, all of those things come into play. And I think it's very interesting because you talked about stigma. And yes, society has evolved to kind of eliminate the social stigma around divorce because it's become, unfortunately, more common practice now. But it doesn't eliminate the stigma for, I find personally, when I speak with my clients, for them, because it's a difficult thing to admit that your relationship is ending or that you failed in some way to make something work that was so important to you. So there is that aspect of stigma that still exists. And I think that's also what impacts children, is because parents have a very hard time explaining to their kids what's going on and how that's going to change, how things are going to change for them and how to understand the change. All of these things are they're very difficult to have children understand.
Even in my own circle, so I have friends who have, been married for a number of years, like myself. And then we also have friends who have separated and then divorced. And we, all of us have agreed that we notice the biggest impact really is on the children. So the advice that we've given some of our friends in this situation is focus on your kids first and foremost. Because all the other stuff, the material stuff that you have to divide and all the anger and the irritation, whatever the case is, because every situation is different, I feel like the kids need to be the primary focus. Do you agree with that?
100%. You could do my job. Sometimes when you're in the process, you get so boggled down. At the end of it, it's really closure and keeping that family nucleus as intact as possible, through the transitional stage of separating. And for kids, they don't understand. They're not in, you know, your lawyer's office every day. They don't hear the conversations, and they shouldn't. So for them, all they see and all they know is that their home life is changing. You know, they may not see mom and dad or, you know, their guardians as much as possible anymore. They don't know. They don't understand. You know, they talk about it with their friends at school, and maybe their friends have different experiences. So there's a relatability issue. Maybe for them it's easy. Maybe for this child it's not easy. How do you explain those nuances, right? And it's about parents keeping focus about that being the most important element to concern yourself about when you're going through a divorce and separation, because your kids, they don't, you know, they don't see the financial war that's happening, right? They only are impacted by the end result. And if you lose sight of what they're going through throughout this process, which can be a lengthy process, then you end up doing so much more harm. Even though, you know, that's no parent's intention is to do that, but losing focus of how this is impacting your kids really does hurt them in the end.
I'm sure that you've had easy cases, but I'm also sure that you've had cases that have been, you know, stressful and intense. So when a couple comes into your office, guns a-blazing, ready to fight, okay, because I've seen it and I've heard it, you know, they just want to get at each other's throat. They just, you know, unfortunately, things went really sour. What role do you play in trying to like say to your client, because it's your client that, you know, you might have to say, you know, well, this is not the best approach. Like, do you feel comfortable saying that and trying to always, you know, finish things off in a very dignified, with integrity, because the kids are involved?
Absolutely. And that's not a conversation that I'm afraid to have. In fact, I make sure that I have that conversation right from the outset. You know, at the moment that we first have a consultation with a new client, you know, that's the opportunity to really set the tone and understand what's the driving factors here. Is it that, you know, there's just been a breakdown and that the couple they're still amicable and they can still co-parent nicely and it's going to be relatively simple. It's just a matter of going through the process to divide assets, so to speak, and figure out logistics with regards to the children and the parenting and things like that. But then, as you say, you get the ones that are embedded in revenge or, you know, anger and rage, and they want to win at all costs. And those are the clients where that can be a very dangerous road to go down, and not dangerous in the sense that, you know, some harm is going to come to them, but dangerous in the sense that that makes the process more difficult for me and for the opposing lawyer. It makes the process more lengthy, more costly. And all of that has an impact on the client, but also their families, right? It's an emotional journey from beginning to end. It's an emotional journey. And you know, they have to be prepared for that. And so what I like to do is really understand what their motivation is. If it's anger, what happened? Give them the time and the space to explain in their own words what's happening. And oftentimes when you do that and they feel heard, then they're more likely to be receptive to your advice, right? Because a lot of the times clients are coming to hear me, you know, recite acts and statutes and case law. They don't care about that. That's my job. But what they do care about is feeling heard, because oftentimes when there's been a breakdown in a relationship, one side or both sides are disconnected. They're not feeling heard. They're not feeling understood. They're not seeing eye to eye. And so they want somebody who can be relatable to them. And they want to know that, you know, I have their best interests and I'm listening and I'm digging into what it is that they want. So when they say to me, you know, I don't want him to have everything. I want to have sole custody. Well, it's my job to also temper those expectations and also set realistic outcomes, because what's going to happen is if I say, yeah, like we're going to make this guy pay, like that's not going to help anybody, because that's not what's going to happen. That's not the way the law works. So it's really about setting those expectations at the beginning and explaining to the client, you know, the realities and be sympathetic to their situation. Let them go through their emotions and their journey while making sure that you're taking control of the process so that they don't spiral. Because what happens is if we start off with, you know, a dog's fight approach. Well, that's not going to lead to any type of calming or peaceful or, you know, quick resolution. And oftentimes when there's that much hurt and anger and pain, you want to solve this as quickly for your clients as possible. You don't want to drag them through court for 2 years. That doesn't help anybody. So it's really about setting those expectations really early and telling the client, you know, this is what the law says. This is what you're realistically looking at. I understand that this may be problematic. I understand this is maybe not what you want to hear, and this is not what's ideal, but this is what the realities are, and this is what you're looking like. And you have to take a reasonable approach, even in a very difficult situation. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a worse situation. And always remind them, you know, like keep reminding them of there's always good. Even when there's bad, there's always good. Let them focus on the good stuff. And let me worry about the bad stuff, because, you know, I'm not heavily emotionally involved, so I'll see it from a different perspective. And when you take that burden off of them, it oftentimes it helps, you know, smooth the waters a little bit.
And I find that, you know, in a situation like that, where, you know, it's a relationship that's gone, you know, awry, you know, I think essentially you do want to get it over with as quickly as possible. And you do want to, so this way they can move on. Each party can move on and create a new life for themselves, and then whatever situation their children are in. Do you often recommend that your clients and their children seek therapy? Do you have like a roster of people who you would refer to? Is that something you would recommend while the process is going on?
Yes, we do have a roster of therapists that we work with that come highly recommended and are very, very reputable and great in what they do. And there's different types of therapy that is recommended in family law. You know, oftentimes, even before the clients are ready to start the legal process, you know, sometimes there's hesitation because they don't know what they want to do yet. They're information gathering, and they don't know if they want to take that leap to say, I'm ready to get separated. I'm ready for a divorce. Sometimes they cling on to hope still, and good for them, because they want to try to repair their relationship as much as possible, oftentimes because they have children. So when I hear that, I often say, you know, I'm here, but it sounds to me that you're not 100% in this boat yet. So I would recommend that you either try a counseling session, whether it's a relationship counselor, whether it's a family counseling session. And at that point, it either works or it doesn't. And then the client becomes more certain about what they want to do. Because the worst thing also is having a client who's in both minds, because it's very difficult to advance a process forward. When you're in the process already, sometimes, you know, there's, unfortunately, sometimes we have clients who experience what we call parental alienation, where one parent is so focused on making sure that the child has very minimal or no contact with the other parent. In law, that's called parental alienation, and it's not acceptable. And so we have what we call family reunification therapists, which also try to help, you know, rebuild relationships between a child and a parent whose relationship has been strained. We also work often with parenting coordinators. And those are very useful in situations where two parents have a very difficult time communicating for the benefit of their child, you know, in terms of pickup and drop-offs and coordinating birthdays and this and that. And a parenting coordinator really helps bridge that gap of communication between them. And those are often helpful. Look, I think therapy is helpful for everybody. Everybody has, you know, things that they want to talk about, and they want to be, like I said before, they want to feel heard. And oftentimes that's the first step. They want to have somebody that they can share something with or talk about and not feel like there's any repercussions, not feel judged, not feel like they're going to be at a disadvantage for sharing some information to their lawyer or something like that, or their family or their friends. And sometimes it is easier to speak to a stranger, right? Because there's no fallback, because there's no embarrassment. And so I think it's a very useful tool. We recommend it all the time to our clients for different reasons. So absolutely, I think it's very important. What we're seeing now as well is a surge in therapists who work with children to help them cope with their emotions. Because, you know, how do children express How come, you know, their one parent isn't here to tuck them to bed every day anymore, right? And they don't know how to express that. So that's a really important thing to think about as well.
When we come back, Nandishi's book, I Used to Have One, But Now I Have Two. This is the Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Have a question for Dr. Claudia? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 105.9 The Region or email us info@1059theregion.com. The Wellness Prescription with Dr. Claudia on 105.9 The Region.
You're listening to 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to The Wellness Prescription. Now, Nandishi, it's interesting because as a divorce lawyer, family lawyer, you've probably seen so many cases of, you know, different situations. But I think most important, you became concerned when you saw the impact it had on kids. And was that your motivation to write a children's book?
Absolutely. So I can't tell you the amount of time that I've had clients come to me and say, I haven't told my kids yet because I don't know what to say. I don't know how they're going to react. I'm scared. I feel bad. I don't know how to start that conversation. And especially the clients who have much younger children, how do you let, you know, toddlers in on that information without rocking their world? And there's so much fear for parents who genuinely want their children to be okay. And they just don't know how to even broach that topic. I mean, it's a difficult topic even as an adult. So I can't even imagine that fear as a parent to tell your child about the changes that they're about to go through. And from a child's perspective, I mean, I remember at the time when divorce wasn't really spoken about as easily as it is now, so many of my friends' parents got divorced and they were so restricted in their ability to speak about it. They didn't know really what to say. They felt this amount of shame and embarrassment and awkwardness that came with the fact that their parents were getting divorced. And it was no fault of their own. They almost felt guilty about that. And they felt so uncomfortable having that conversation. And so that really was the motivation for me writing this book is seeing the perspective of parents who have these young children who have absolutely no clue how to even start that conversation. And from a child's perspective, you know, realistically depicting in a way that's digestible to small children, what the realities of divorce may look like for them.
The title of your book, I Used to Have One, Now I Have Two. So tell us what, I mean, I can make assumptions of what that actually means, but I'll let you do the good work and tell us what the book is about and what the title actually means.
I Used to Have One, But Now I Have Two really talks about having two of everything, because what's going to happen for most children when they go through a divorce is, you know, they go from having one house, one bedroom, one, pet, one vacation, one Christmas, one of everything to having two of everything, because now they have it at one parent's house and then they have it again at another parent's house, right? So it really doubles. But in that, you know, there's an emotional transition that has to happen. There's an awareness that children need to go through, and you have to let them feel that, right? It's not always as exciting to have two birthday parties. Like, yeah, it sounds cool. I have birthday party at mom's house and then birthday party at dad's house. But maybe the child wants both their parents together, and maybe that makes them sad, and that should be okay for them to feel like that, right? So the book really is a way of children being able to read the book and identify with the book and look at the story and say, oh, that's me too. That's me. Like, I'm that person. And also be able to share it with their friends. It's also meant and read to be in a way that parents can read the book to their children and have it be a conversation starter and say, you know, this is what it's going to look like today. And then tomorrow, it's going to be like this. And this is why. And it's illustrated in a way that makes it very warm for kids. Like, divorce is a very harsh topic. It's nothing fun about that topic. But the book is intended to make it a little bit more lighthearted.
In the experience that I have with a couple of friends who have gone through divorce, that's exactly what they feel like. They feel like they're the bad guy, especially if one parent over the other initiated the need to end the relationship. They feel like the child is going to look at them differently. What I also like about the book is that Yes, you imagine giving it to a toddler who needs to understand that they're going to have two birthday parties or two bedrooms, but you can also give it to a teenager, right? As a really fun way to let them know that life is going to change, but it's not going to be horrible, right? You're going to have, you know, time away from each parent, and that's not a bad thing, right? So imagine if you want to have little special mom time, that's your week. And then if you want dad time, that's your week. I feel like we can really switch, turn the dialogue around and change the conversation to make it where just because we're not living together doesn't mean we don't care about each other or I care about you less. Because I feel like that would be a conversation that a child at any age would have in their own mind.
100%. That's right. Like even for, you know, it sounds, I mean, the book is illustrated in a way where it's very geared towards small children. However, the message is, as you said, universal. And it's intended to bring some element of happiness and hope and positivity in a very bleak situation. I mean, there's no way as a divorce lawyer, you know, I call myself sometimes the angel of death for relationships because, like, you know, everyone's like, you're a divorce lawyer. Oh God. But you know, it doesn't need to be so bleak. It doesn't need to be so negative. It is a fresh start for a lot of people. It is a way to, you know, change your life, restart, you know, anew when something, you know, wasn't necessarily working for you. And there is, you know, good that comes from change. It's how you frame it to children and preteens and teenagers so that they become, you know, well-informed adults, you know, and they don't feel like they've gone through neglect. And they don't feel like one parent doesn't love them or, you know, their parents chose to selfishly do this and forget their needs and things like that. Because those are the things we hear. It's been echoed so many times that it's really sad that, you know, kids might feel that way because in my experience, my clients are dedicated to their children and how do you have that conversation when it's such a difficult topic and every child handles it differently. Every child handles it differently is also what we need to, you know, keep in mind because, you know, situations are unique. As we said, some are very easy and some are very difficult. And some children are very, very sensitive to it. And some, you know, some kids put on their earphones and their iPad and they coast through it. And, you know, not to say that they're not given the same amount of conflict, but like children are capable and have the capacity at different times and different ways. Right. So this book really intends to bring some commonality to the experience between children and parents and bring them some hope. And really, it's, you know, at the end of it all, say the most important message here is that your children are going to be loved no matter what. And I think that's the most important message that a child needs to hear, that they're not losing out because mom and dad may not be together anymore.
If any living thing does not feel unconditionally loved, things are going to start to go awry. And that's why the book is actually a resource for parents equally as it is for the kids, because as a parent, you could probably read that book out loud to your child and think, those are the words that I really wanted to convey. I just didn't know how because I'm inundated with all the other issues that I have going on in my life. And it's really hard, especially if your partner, if you're not like talking terms, if you don't communicate well, how do you get the message across to your kids individually? As a family, at least you have a book. Here's a way to get the conversation started so that this way change is not going to be such a scary concept. The change of having a different home every couple of days or every week. I think it's really, really important.
Thank you. I hope so. I hope so. That's the intent anyway.
I love it. And I love the animation. It just looks so fun and inviting and it just looks so carefree. Before I end the segment though, I have a question for you. So as much as, you know, you're going to go from having one of everything to two of everything, I love that. But what about in the situation, what are your thoughts on those families who choose to keep the family home and then the kids stay in the family home? And it's nothing to do with the book. It's more just your perspective. And then every other week, one parent leaves and comes back.
So we typically call that a nesting arrangement. And that's usually a temporary solution. As a family law lawyer, I will say that it's not the greatest solution. A lot of parents opt to do that for a short period of time because they don't want to displace their kids. They want to make sure that their school district isn't affected and that their friends are there and things like that. And then it's the parents who are shifting. The problem is sometimes is that you know, it just prolongs the inevitable. And it's also sometimes very confusing for the child, right? Because they're not understanding the transition so much when there's, for them, their physical space hasn't changed, but everything else around them is changing. Like, you know, I see one parent Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then I see the other parent the other days, or I don't see this one at dinner time, and I see this one to pick me up from soccer or whatever it is. So sometimes it's a clash because they're not understanding the change because their physical being hasn't displaced at all. And it's like I said, it's a temporary solution. Oftentimes, maybe some of the parents want to make sure they finish off the school year and then they'll make a decision, right? And sometimes it's also financially based. You know, with matrimonial homes, as we call them, they're dealt very specifically in law. So it could be a situation where the market's not good. They don't want to sell the house right now. They want to optimize how much they would get back in terms of resale for the house. Maybe one parent is looking to buy the other parent's interest out so that they can stay in the home with the child, and they just need some extra months to accumulate that money or those funds so that they can do that. Those are really the situations where I foresee that kind of arrangement works temporarily. For the most part now, we try to do that clean break as soon as possible so that, you know, everybody can start adjusting to the new norm is what we call it, right? The new realities. And like I said, it's not always the most convenient or beneficial to the child to stay in an environment and have the parents displace because it's confusing. It's confusing and it's not sustainable long-term. And what happens when, you know, one or both parents end up having new significant others? Well, what do they do then? They bring them to the house? Like, it just gets too complicated. Right. So it's better to do that break sooner rather than later.
Well, Nandisha, can't thank you enough for joining me today. And I encourage every family who is maybe thinking about or is in the process of divorce to purchase the book. But you're also offering a giveaway. So tell us once again how we're going to get this book. So they should follow you on social media. How can they do that?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram. So my personal Instagram is @Nandishi. My name is there. And my lawyer Instagram is @thatlawyergirlnextdoor. My book is available on both platforms. And if you reach out to me directly and you follow me on both accounts, the first 10 people will get a book.
Amazing. That's awesome. I encourage everyone to do that. That's great. So it's on Instagram @Nandishi and on Instagram @thatlawyergirlnextdoor. Excellent. And you can always find me on Instagram @Claudia_Macchiella or my website, ClaudiaMacchiella.com. That's my show for this week. If you missed it, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and Audible. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you all for listening, and I hope this helps you live your best life.
The Wellness Prescription was brought to you by Healthy Planet. Order online at HealthyPlanetCanada.com or go online to find a location nearest you.